Hey everyone, well, the wait is finally over. Here we are at the Hurricane Katrina 20th anniversary GeoTrek podcast episode. You figured it out by now. Our special guest is Jim Cantore, one of the most famous personalities in weather coverage. We're actually going to go to Jim and hear his story of what it was like to ride out Hurricane Katrina in coastal Mississippi 20 years ago. An unbelievably catastrophic weather event that will be talked about all throughout history. We're going back with Jim, one of the most dynamic personalities in weather, to hear his account of what it was like to ride out Katrina, but then also lessons learned and how we can apply this moving forward. Hey, everyone, I'm Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek podcast. On the GeoTrek podcast, we explore the world to bring you stories about extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. Stories like this, going back to Katrina, what it was like to be on the ground, but also how can we apply these lessons moving forward? That's what we're going to cover in this episode of the podcast. And I'm excited, actually, that is focused on coastal Mississippi. This is actually a two-part series. We had a companion episode that we recently did on Hurricane Katrina impacts in New Orleans. And when a lot of people think back to Katrina, they think that's a storm that hit New Orleans. It was devastating for New Orleans, but don't forget, the highest storm surge on record in the Western Hemisphere was right there in coastal Mississippi where Jim Cantore was. So without further introduction, let's just jump right into this episode with very famous weather broadcaster Jim Cantore, who was right there 20 years ago in Hurricane Katrina in coastal Mississippi. Jim, thank you so much for taking time to come in the GeoTrek podcast.
Sure, Hal. Always great to talk to you, buddy.
Jim, we're talking 20 years since Katrina. I got to get in your mind. I mean, as you're seeing this beast just blow up in the Gulf 20 years ago as it approaches the northern Gulf Coast, what are you thinking?
You know, it's really funny. Even before the satellite, I remember looking at the obs out of Key West. And even as this thing was moving away, I'm like, oh my God, Key West is not, their wind isn't dropping. It's staying high. It's still gusting to 65 miles an hour. I'm like, the thing is growing as it's moving away from Key West. So, I mean, that was the first thing. And then I remember, you know, Saturday morning getting up and looking at this satellite Cat 5. I'm like, oh my God. I mean, you just have a sick feeling in your stomach, dude, because you know that this is death. You're looking at it right there.
Well, and you know, we saw the intensity blow up, but also the geographic size, right?
Right, exactly. Which we later learned played a massive role in the timing of the surge, as well as the breadth of the surge. So that's, you know, again, something I kind of learned as I was in Gulfport at the Armed Forces Retirement Home. I'm like, wait a minute, we're still 3 hours from landfall, and I've got 20 plus feet of surge. It's coming in the building. That's impossible. Usually the max surge, as we're all been taught, it comes in at the time of landfall. And granted, it was a Louisiana landfall already, but we were still 3 hours from Mississippi landfall.
So Jim, you and your team at the Weather Channel, y'all have been providing just exceptional live weather coverage for decades. Walk us through the process. How do you cover an event like this? Like, walk us through your decision-making process of where to put you and your team for this high profile coverage of an unprecedented event like this.
I mean, you know, we already were in the midst of a busy season. We knew it was going to be crazy. So, you know, I was pretty much on standby the entire summer. I think Katrina was like 17 days out in the field, something which is the most ever I've ever done. But, you know, there's teams that go out, producers with the teams, photographer. Sometimes we would send a grip or an audio person. But that's it, dude. This isn't like a 20-person CBS, NBC crew that goes out. You know, it's just a few of us that go out there and get the job done. We've always been the little engine that could. And you know, after NBC bought us, we were kind of spoiled for a while. You know, we had these huge crews, and we had them do a lot of the work for us. So it was kind of great at the end of the day. But anyway, back to Katrina. You know, remember, I started in Florida. Okay. I started when this thing was coming into Fort Lauderdale and Broward County, as a developing Cat 1. So it was crazy. I mean, I was getting sandblasted down there, but you know, we make the decision, we go out. I mean, I always felt responsible for my team. You know, Steph was out, she went to Florida, and that was back when, you know, it wasn't like a perfect cone. It wasn't like a small cone. You had to kind of ride the edges of it and the middle of it. And that's how we used to play it. Now there's so much confidence. We ride more of the middle. Or, if, you know, a situation like Ian, where we know that that southern edge is certainly as much in play. It's just a different, you know, different thing. So we put more teams out the later we went on after the 2005 season, but yet we made our little grid a lot smaller so we would be able to keep everybody in the midst of it. And that's the thing, how when Live View came along, and this is after Katrina, you're basically broadcasting the entire storm from the field. So that made our job harder, a lot harder.
That's interesting, because people want real-time footage from all these different locations, right?
Yeah, but we would just go from team to team to team. When one person got tired, the other person would jump in for a while, but they would be in, you know, kind of the teeth of this thing all along. So we never really lost being in the thick of it, if you will.
Jim, when you and your ground crew shifted from Florida to Northern Gulf Coast, did you know your bullseye was going to be Gulfport Biloxi? Did you talk about New Orleans? I mean, how did you make this decision?
Where I was on my way to New Orleans. I was on my way to New Orleans, and you know, Stu at the time, Stu Ostro says, you guys got to stop. You got to stop in Biloxi and wait there. We think that there's a chance this could turn a little bit and, you know, that will be ground zero for the hurricane. And sure enough, I mean, it was certainly part of it. The whole damn Mississippi coast was ground zero, but I mean, you know, that's the thing. Hal, what's interesting is if it wasn't for the man-made disaster of the levees, it was really a Mississippi show, you know, in terms of the surge and things like that. But once the levees failed and New Orleans flooded, you know, that took almost all the attention. And it took a lot of the attention off of Mississippi in the middle of an absolute catastrophic event.
Jim, I'm really glad you mentioned coastal Mississippi. We know Katrina's Mississippi surge was the largest storm surge on record in the Western Hemisphere. A lot of people still just think of Katrina with New Orleans and forget about Mississippi. There you were in coastal Mississippi. Tell us about your venue. You mentioned this veterans home. Where exactly was your refuge?
Yeah, so we started out at a Days Inn, which is right on the beach. Of course, that is no longer with us. It's gone. It was really weird going back and actually seeing a slab left where my room was. But it was a Saturday morning, and I'm standing to the right of the Treasure Bay, camera right to the Treasure Bay Casino, which is a floating casino. Back then, Hal, you know, to gamble, they had to be out over the water. That's how it made it legal. But it was business as usual. And when you think of gambling and you think of these casinos for Mississippi, that's a huge part of their economy, huge part of their economy. So, you know, here it is as a weekend. They didn't want to shut that down. No way.
But so the weekend before Katrina, they're still up and running.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Saturday. And finally, you know, by Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, you know, I had alarmed the mayor enough, AJ Holloway. And he's like, Jim, you're scaring everybody. And I'm like, AJ, good. I mean, this is a disaster. It's not going to be as strong as Camille. It's like, I don't care. You could fit two or three Camilles inside this thing. So that you have to take size into account here. And some of these surge forecasts are going to topple over this Treasure Bay Casino here to my left. So absolutely crazy stuff. And finally, evacuation orders were given and this place shut down. But they literally dropped everything and left. Because once the hurricane came through and blew through those casinos, there were money chips everywhere. I mean, they were just tossed around like, you know, hailstones all over the ground. I mean, it was amazing.
Jim, I'm really glad you brought up the Katrina Camille comparison, because a lot of people said, hey, our house survived Cat 5 Camille. The water didn't quite reach it. Katrina is downgraded to a Cat 3. We'll be fine. That's not what happened, right?
No, that's not what happened. That's not what happened. And, you know, people just have to realize that every hurricane is different. You know, size does matter, especially in hurricanes. I remember I had the mayor of Gulfport call me during Ike in 2008. So think about this. This is 3 years later, and he's got 8 feet of storm surge in Gulfport. He's like, Jim, what's going on? This thing's coming into Galveston. Why do I have 8 feet of storm surge? And it's all, you know, shape of the coast, the bathymetry, the size of the storm. And, you know, this storm was huge. Huge storm.
Yeah, and these big storms in the 2000s, like Ike and Katrina, I mean, they flooded hundreds of miles of coastline with deep salt water, right?
And wiped out and changed forever these coastlines. So, and that's what people have to realize. You know, you go back today and you see places like Bay St. Louis or, you know, Bolivar Peninsula or, you know, past Christiane, all these homes are 25, 30 feet up on stilts. And to Mississippi's credit, they have done a beautiful job bringing this coastline back 20 years later. I am blown away when we go to Josh Morgenman's party at Bay St. Louis. I mean, there is a charm there that is unmistakable. Gulfport, just a sweet little town. It's kind of cool to hang out there. So, you know, you don't want this to happen so that people can build back better. But if that's what they have to do, then so be it. And they've just done a great job.
It's always amazing. You know, you go to Josh's house, it's fortified. I mean, the thing could take a Cat 4, Cat 5 hit, but then it has this Southern historic charm, you know. And I think he and others have shown us you can build resilient and still keep that charm and character.
Yeah, the Fortified Homes Group and all these new codes that have come up, you know, since we've had these big storms. And again, same thing. It's sad that it takes that to do this. We need to build for our natural disaster. We don't do that enough, whether it's hurricane, fire, flood, whatever, tornado. I mean, we have to be able to keep roofs on our homes and garage doors and windows. And so you have something to come back to and start over. Because if you're starting from scratch, can you imagine dealing with all of that? And that's once the insurance companies decide if it was fire or water or whatever. You know, you just want to have something to come back to. And we can build to our natural disaster. That's the most important part. But with Katrina, you literally had a clean slate for miles and miles and miles of coastline.
It's unbelievable just seeing slabs where houses used to be. Jim, in some of these cases, people come back, they're just numb. They're looking at a slab and someone says, no, that's not the slab where your house was. Your house used to be that other slab. You might not even know which slab was your house because everything's like a moonscape, right? Everything is gone.
It's all gone. And it's all one big pile back up to the train tracks or even beyond. That was one of the big measurements that they use, you know, the train tracks. But you know, as well as I do, some of this water came so far inland, up the rivers. I mean, it flooded homes 10 miles, 20 miles inland up the river because of the push of the surge. And that's what's, I think, most amazing to me. And what really escapes me the most, and the part that I wish that I was a bigger part of, was when that surge came in. Because it was about 8 o'clock. We finished our live shot at about 8:06. We went into the mess hall, which was downstairs with all the vets. Everybody's eating. This is where all the food is. This is where all the medication is. This is where the invalids are with their wheelchairs. And the Navy CB leader comes in and he goes, Jim, what's going on? We have water coming in the building. I'm like, what? Remember, we're 3 hours from landfall. But between 8:06 and 8:15, in 9 minutes, the water, I didn't see the other thing too, remember it was raining very, very hard. We were already in the rain bands, but I did not see the water coming in already to that level. But I went to those back doors and I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm like, how in the hell? I mean, is there a drain flooded somewhere? I mean, but no, it was the storm surge. We had become a part of the Gulf of Mexico.
So this is a surge pushing in 2 to 3 hours before landfall. Yes. What was your elevation there of the veterans home? What was the elevation?
Well, okay. So backtracking a little bit, they came and sought us out Saturday night. We were looking for a place to go. We were going to go inland a little ways. And they said, Jim, come stay with us. You know, we got 450 heroes here. We're not evacuating. We're 27 feet above sea level. I'm like, seriously? I said, we can handle that with a 25-foot forecast. We can handle that well. What do you think, guys? So we all went as a team. I let everybody come in as a team. I don't just push everybody around. And we're like, yeah, they're giving us beds. They're feeding us. You know, we get to get some great stories from our heroes. And why not? But by that next morning, dude, in 9 minutes, that water was coming in that building, which I was told was 27 feet. Now, I later went and checked the specs of that building. It was at 20 feet. So it certainly makes sense with the surge values we got that it was coming in the first floor of that building. But it was at that point, Hal. It was at that point by 8:15. It wasn't about the TV anymore, buddy. It was about getting these heroes upstairs, getting everybody out of harm's way, saving what food and water and medications that we could. Because
and Jim, it sounds like the water's coming up incredibly fast and flowing into the building, right?
Yes, yes. Power. So think about it. Power goes out. You get those air-conditioned plastic steps. Those all get, you know, condensation, you know, just pretty much consumes the entire building at that point. And you're slipping and sliding. You're kind of carry these, you know, battery powered wheelchairs, you know, with one of our heroes in it up the stairs to the second floor.
And so that was really the getting people up was the main push.
Thank God there was 20 Navy CBs there. If they had not been there, you know, these young kids, if they had not been there, no, it wouldn't have gone well.
Jim, how many vets did y'all have to get up from the ground floor?
I mean, some could walk upstairs, but you know, like I said, it was breakfast time and everybody kind of convened on the second floor. And so you looked over this overhang below you at all this water coming in the front and coming in from the back. And what a sight that was. But in terms of how many, I think we helped get about four or five of those chairs up. Probably about four or five of those chairs up, plus water, food, like I said, medication, whatever we could carry up, we were carrying up as quick as we could. And of course, down at the bottom, think about this. God only knows what was coming in that building, because right outside it, you've got the fuel for the generator, which was now floating around and underwater. So now the fuel is too. It's turned over, the tank's turned over. And so you could smell that fuel coming in the building. And that was a part of all that. So, man.
So this is like highly contaminated, murky water. Jim, yes. How long from the time you saw the elevated water near the threshold of the building to when it was flowing through that first floor?
I didn't, Hal. That's the point. When I stood outside and did my shot at the top of the hour, I was actually in the parking lot. I mean, there may have been, you know, 6 inches of standing water, but it wasn't coming in. So in 9 minutes... that water went up another 7 feet into the building.
That's incredible.
I mean, it all came in at once, like a big tsunami. And that's what's, like I said, I really wish that I could have seen what happened there. When we were in the mess hall eating, you know, just trying to grab a little food, we were blocked from the windows of the outside, you know, the front entrance and the back side. So I couldn't see any of that. All I know is when the leader of the CBs came in and said, "Hey, Jim, what's going on here? Is this the storm surge?" I'm like, it can't be. And it was. That's exactly what it was.
Well, that just 9 minutes ago, you're in the parking lot and there's no real sign of a big
exactly
surge.
Right.
Like, how
exactly
in the world can this happen, right?
That at that speed. But now you know why surge is the killer. Now you know why surge is the number one, because it comes in so fast. Now I've seen storm surge come in pretty doggone fast. We were in Pensacola for, what was it, Laura? I can't even remember. God, dude, when you do 115 of these, you don't remember. I think it was Laura, Sandy, Sally. Yes. Okay. So I'm like, guys, so we're at the seawall. I'm like, as soon as I see the littlest ripple come over the top of that seawall, we are packing up and going. And Hal, we just got back to a little rise near our hotel where a bank was that was about 3.5 feet off of the main level. And we were on top of that rise. And, buddy, we just made it.
It sounds like you have a lot of respect for the speed at which these saltwater storm surges can move. I mean, they're incredibly fast, right, from your life experience.
Either that or I'm pretty damn lucky, bro, to be honest with you.
And you hear this all the time where people are saying, "Hey, I'm watching it. We're going to be fine." And all of a sudden they're up to their neck in water in their dining room. Right. I mean, it can happen so quickly.
And that's the takeaway. You just can't believe how fast that storm surge comes in. It really is like a tsunami. If you remember the video of the Guadalupe River flood, okay, where all that water just kind of built up into the water, where we were watching videos of it coming downstream. Now, granted, this is different. Okay, this is a flash flood, but it's kind of on that same level where literally in just a few minutes, you had a massive water rise. And this in this case, it was moving water. But with the storm surge, you know, you've also got waves on top of that. rise. Think about that. And that's doing a lot, just a tremendous amount of damage. And then as the whole thing went on, I'm in the building, I'm looking out of the building. All the cars are windblown to one side of the parking lot. There's huge water oaks floating around. And, you know, Katrina was so big, it took all day to go through the east side of that, the south side of that, the west side of that. You know, I mean, it just kept going. And at one point, as you know, the whole state of Mississippi was out of power.
Jim, when you and I were chatting about this over dinner in Bay St. Louis, you were mentioning that there were some trucks that were lost and someone trying to maybe save a vehicle. I mean, what goes on in your mind with situational awareness? Like, at what point do you say, hey, the vehicles aren't important, we're just going to focus on saving our lives here, right?
So, yeah, we had a satellite truck, and we had two other photographers with us, plus our vehicle. So that's four of them. And again, once the Navy CBs came in and said, guys, the parking lot's flooded, the water's coming in the building, the guys are like, you know, hey, I left some of my camera equipment in there. We're exhausted, Hal. We drove from Fort Lauderdale all the way up. We're on our way to New Orleans, but no stop, you know. Next morning, boom, right into live shots all day, you know, little sleep that night. And then, you know, finally started right up at the Armed Forces Retirement Home on Monday morning. But we were also there Sunday night. So Sunday morning, we were at the Days Inn, left there, sought higher ground, decided upon invitation to stay at the Armed Forces Retirement Home. We did broadcast that night, talked to some vets that, you know, weren't really concerned about the storm surge or the hurricane at that. And, you know, I heard a couple of times, well, it's not going to be as strong as Camille. That always comes up. And then all of a sudden the next morning, dude, the unthinkable. We're in the surge.
No, I mean, and even for the locals there, right? Sometimes we defer to the locals. It's like you're saying, even the locals didn't expect this. And this ties into a bigger theme. There's a section of our podcast we call Weathered Wisdom, where we asked every guest, what is one weather event that completely shocked you, left such a strong impression on you? Jim, you've been covering the biggest weather stories for decades now. I know you've covered so many thousands and thousands of events, but I asked you a form of this question 2 years ago when we were in South Padre Island. Like, okay, yeah, with everything you've covered, what's something that completely shocked you? And you mentioned actually the massive blizzard in Western New York during that lake effect event that killed more than 40 people. What stands out to you about that event as well? That just, how could this blindside so many locals on the ground?
I mean, if you want to just wrap up Katrina with this, the fact that we were told it was 27 feet and we had water coming in the building, I'm like, oh my God, this has got to be a 35-foot storm surge. This is like nothing we've ever even heard of before. But, you know, going back, knowing now with engineering specs, hey, this is only 20 feet. So the 27, 28, 28, 9 feet is right on par. Certainly makes sense. Still, we lost all our vehicles. I went, you know, running out after a satellite truck operator. I never thought I'd have to do that. He was trying to save his vehicle. Finally, it got too deep. The water's still coming up. I had to get back in. So he rode out the doggone hurricane in the satellite truck. And boy, that was not fun. But in terms of shock factor with a well-forecast system, that the wording was perfect from the weather service, that it was just perfectly symmetric flow from weather service to broadcasters, that blizzard they had in New York, which was their second one, by the way, of December, was accompanied by Arctic Air. And people were so dead set on Christmas and getting to grandma's house or wherever they were going, they just didn't pay attention. And there's one thing about getting caught in a blizzard, but to get caught in a blizzard where it's below zero outside and you get stuck in your car, I mean, I couldn't believe how many people we lost. I'm like,
you just don't expect to see more than 40 fatalities in Western New York. Yeah. You just don't ever expect to see that.
These are savvy people. They know about blizzards. They know about weather like this. But we have to teach people that regardless of how much you want to do something, it's July 4th, it's Christmas, it's Labor Day weekend, there's a hurricane coming, but I want to go to the beach. No. You have to pivot. You have to be able to pivot because that's how serious the situation is. I don't know if – I hope we can do that, Hal, because if the wording – is as good as what the weather service put out and what we were as broadcasters putting out about that blizzard, and we still lost 40 people. You know, I don't know. People are going to do what people are going to do, you know?
Well, and Jim, both that Western New York blizzard and Hurricane Katrina, we're seeing a large loss of life of locals, right? These aren't just tourists. These are locals who say, oh, I've been through tons of hurricanes before. I've been through tons of lake effect events before. And it's the locals dying because despite 30, 40, 50 years of history, Mother Nature can always far exceed what you've seen before, right? I think that's what we see in both of those events.
Right. And I think as well prepared as people are, what you don't count on is, okay, what about the other guy? What about the jackknife bus or tractor trailer that's now trapped me on the interstate? You know, those things play a role in how the whole event goes for you. So that's what's important. And I don't think people, you know, really value that part of the equation as well as they should.
That's a good point, Jim. What's happening around you, right? With a car wreck. I was riding out Hurricane Idalia in Steinhatchee, Florida, and there was an elevated house. They said, we know the surge will go under our house. We're elevated high enough. The marina next to the house collapsed with these huge metal poles, shrimp boats. I thought they're going to have a shrimp boat in their living room. Yeah, their house is elevated above the water, but what happened next to them, right? That a marina next to them may be life or death for them. It's what you're talking about here. What happens with a fellow driver or the house next to yours? There's a lot of things in play that are out of our control, right?
There is. And, you know, this guy named Frank in Cedar Key, we were covering one of the storms that's come up into the northeastern part of the Gulf. And, you know, he said he woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning and there's the water on his deck. Now he's 10 feet up and he's looking at the water lapping under his deck. And I'm like, dude, do you realize the surge was forecast to be as high as 10 feet and it only went to 7, but another 3 feet and it would have come in your house and you may have drowned. It may have taken down the building.
Yeah, it's serious stuff. And as you know, with storms, it's fast moving water, there's waves, there's debris. You don't want to be in that water, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. And you're on your own. You know, you don't know what you're going to have to walk out to. Do you have heavy boots? And if you get cut out there or injured, who is going to cut? And I think of this for myself now. You know, that's why I wear body armor and a helmet and stuff like that. I'm like, who's going to come get you? And what right do I have to ask a first responder to come out and put his or her life in line because I did something stupid? I mean, seriously, those are the kind of things I think of. But I think everybody has to think of that.
No, for sure. That's a really good suggestion. You're right. It's not just your own life, but it's like, okay, how do you get medical services? How do you get attention? As you know, things break down real quickly in a natural disaster. Jim, going back to Katrina, the water recedes. I mean, what do you see? I mean, what does the world look like there on the coast of Mississippi?
Think about this for a second. You got over 80 miles that looked like a movie set. I've got boats in the third story building of a hotel. I've got casinos that were floating that are now onshore. I've got money chips all over the place. We were right near the aquarium in Gulfport. They had an aquarium and some of these, you know, sea lions and things like that. Once that water retreated, they were left behind. There was dolphins in a swimming pool at a hotel, but the sea lions are in the middle of the road. And they couldn't move some of these sea lions. So they're sitting out there in the baking hot sun. Dude, that was horrible. That sticks with me more than anything, that image. Because you couldn't help this poor creature. That sticks with me.
Yeah, and it just shows the level to which that part of the coast was blindsided, right? I mean, if they knew that they're going to be annihilated by a surge, they maybe could have taken some action. It looks like, you know, even locals there were surprised to some extent, big time by the surge.
Well, again, as I said, the thinking on a lot of people's behalfs was, hey, this isn't going to be as strong as Camille. It's not going to be as big as Camille. And I've done 115 of these, and I can tell you, Hal, that every one of them is different. Every single one of them, whether it's a depression, a storm, a hurricane, I mean, they may come into the same place, just like, you know, we've had the two top surges, right, are Camille and Katrina in the same place in Passe Christiane. So, but they're different storms in terms of size and how much of the coast that they impacted.
Yeah, Jim, you're talking about with your massive sample size of over what, over 115 hurricanes you've covered. You've seen it all. And Josh Morgenman shared this with us on the podcast. He's been in the core of over 80 hurricanes, which I think is a world record. And he mentioned everyone is different, right? And we talk to people that have been through three hurricanes or four hurricanes. And the last question is like, why do they always hit at night? Things like this. It's a well-meaning question, but it just shows with a small sample size, you start to see patterns that aren't really there, right?
I mean, first of all, for me, it's 115 all storms. So depression, wannabe, tropical storm, or hurricane. That's the stuff that I'm got. Josh has got the most number of hurricanes ever because he goes around the globe, you know, which is just incredible how he does all that. Definitely, definitely amazing to go to a place that you don't even know. Okay. And wonder, holy cow, am I ever going to be able to get out of here? So that's beyond amazing. But yeah, we just, they're all different. They're all different. They all behave differently. You know, these rapid intensification cycles, especially we've been dealing with in the last 10 years. I think some of the high resolution models now have gotten a nice handle on those HAFS models are doing a great job with intensification. So, I mean, we're making headway there. We've definitely shrunk the cone. Now we're doing better with intensification. And the more we can alert people, man, the better we can get them and get them out of harm's way. Plus, Hal, what goes along with that, it doesn't matter how good I alert you. If you don't prepare, if you don't create a better mousetrap for yourself to live in and have something to come back to, what's the point?
Yeah. And Jim, like you mentioned, with the rapid pace of Katrina's surge, the minutes and hours that people delay consulting their friends, seeing what other people are going to do. I mean, in some of these rapid floods or, you know, rapidly intensifying hurricanes, like you mentioned, the Guadalupe River flood, I mean, minutes are the difference between life and death sometimes, right?
Right. And like you were just talking about timing, when this stuff comes in makes all the difference in the world in terms of life or death, I think. Because people are, I mean, let's face it, we sleep at night. It's just the way humans are. So we're not ready for it. If we don't have the right alerts and the proper procedures to get that alert out, and what it means and what type of action people take. Do they have a plan? You know, what happens in a place where you have hundreds of children and you have a flood potential, you live in a floodplain, your camp is in a floodplain. I'm just blown away by that. I'm really, really blown away by that. We just have to do a better job.
No, for sure. And I think, like you said, it getting out ahead of it and being prepared mentally and having a plan, like you said.
You have to. Listen, I know everybody can't afford the 10% that you would add to a house to upgrade it to hurricane status, make the windows stronger, make the door stronger, the garage door specifically, tie the roof down. Really important things. But, you know, I want people to think when they build their next house, what's more important, to have that, you know, that Viking appliance, or to have a garage that withstands, you know, a hurricane gust? Or a tornado.
Well, Jim, that's a good point. I mean, you have people that they simply can't afford the extra resiliency, but then you got a lot of folks that are doing the granite countertops and the upgraded bathroom, and you're thinking the money is there to make your place more resilient if you make that choice, right?
Right. And you know, Josh is a great example. I'm glad we talked about him because he planned out that home. He planned out where it was, how high it is, the type of roof that he used, the type of siding, how it's, you know, in place to withstand a very strong hurricane. And you know what? I mean, if that doesn't give you peace of mind, I don't know what does at the end of the day. And I think we need to move the mindset in that way if we're going to live in harm's way. And as you know, here in North America, Hal, there's a lot of natural disasters that can come our way.
No matter what time of year it is. No, for sure. We know about that. We know we're watching your excellent coverage of you and your team year round. You know, hurricane season is just a small part of that, of what you and your team at the Weather Channel are doing. Jim, when you look back at Katrina, what's the biggest lesson you learned? And, you know, how can we be better prepared for an event like this, if God forbid anything like this were to happen again? What's your biggest lesson you learned?
I mean, for me personally, I never want to be in the surge again with my team. Or if I am, I want to be able to get up high like we've done with a couple of examples. You know, I know I'm in a really safe building and structure or a parking garage where I can just go up. That's fine. But we, you know, we need to be able to prepare certainly so that we can continue our coverage and have vehicles and things like that. For people, they have to do the same thing. do the best job that you can to get back as quick as you can to resume your life. Because let's face it, it's a hell of an interruption.
For those of us that have been in the surge, you realize how devastating and how quickly it can all happen. Like you said, it's the number one killer. I think once you've been in that, you're like, I don't want to be in there again, right?
No, you don't. Yeah. You know, and the part that I missed of how fast that came in, I wish I could have seen it. It's kind of like I wanted to see the beast, and I didn't get to see the beast. I know the beast is there, but I didn't get to see it come in. But I just know that when we went to breakfast, I was standing in the parking lot. When we came out 15 minutes later, or when we were told by the, you know, the leader of the Navy CBs, hey, the water's coming in the building, you're like, wait a minute, that's like 7 feet off the back deck. That doesn't make any sense. But it was.
Yeah, so quickly. For our listeners that want to watch what a surge looks like, I know Max Olson had an excellent cam footage of Hurricane Ian. And then you can also do a web search for Super Typhoon Haiyan in Tacloban, Philippines. I know Josh and his friends were there. That surge almost looked like a tsunami, how instantaneous it was. And it fits with what you're saying here, Jim, that even though the water might start slow, a slow rise, it can have a real big push in a very short amount of time.
I mean, a foot or more a minute is not out of the question. Hell.
And that's fast-flowing water. That's not a swimming pool.
Put that image in their mind, bro. They need to put that image in their mind. And you just don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah, and Jim, this isn't water rising like a swimming pool. This is fast-flowing water as well, right?
With waves and likely debris on top of it. Yep.
Yeah, not a place you want to be. Jim, you and I have been talking about the hurricane season this year, extremely active in the Pacific, the Atlantic relatively quiet. I mean, what are your thoughts as we're moving deeper into this tropical season?
I mean, what always scares all of us, right, is when does that switch turn on in the Atlantic? And all of a sudden, you know, you've got 5-6 areas of interest as opposed to nothing expected over the next 7 days. So that's when the switch goes on. And where we go from there, where they go from there, you know, we take them individually. But from what we're seeing in the Pacific so far this year, I mean, if that starts to translate into the Atlantic, I mean, I hope the heck we don't have two of these at once making left. That's my biggest fear, Hal. We have two of these at once and people are caught off guard and we don't have enough supplies to actually, you know, deal with the potential outcomes of two landfalling hurricanes literally within 24 hours of each other.
Well, and Jim, we've seen this before where the Atlantic can ramp up in a hurry. Phil Klotzbach always talks about how peaked the Atlantic season is with 90% of the activity from early August to early October. Right. It can go from quiet to hyperactive in a blink, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, at the time we're broadcasting this, we've had three named storms, or taping this, I should say. We've had three named storms, but that could change in a big hurry. And like I said, if you look at what's going on in the Pacific right now, if that happens to translate into the Atlantic basin, watch out.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll watch that as some of those patterns can shift from one basin to the other. Jim, much appreciate you coming on the podcast. We're going to be staying tuned, glued to the Weather Channel, the excellent coverage you and your team are providing this year. I just really appreciate you coming on the podcast. We're hoping we never see anything remotely like a Hurricane Katrina again. If we do,
amen,
I know our listeners will be better prepared from your guidance today and from the real-time coverage you're providing in the field as well.
Hal, thanks for having me. I love what I do. I hope I may make a difference after all these years. That's why I'm still doing it. So we'll just take them one at a time, brother. And we'll get through it.
Jim, as we wrap up this podcast, what's one final take-home message you'd like to share with our listeners?
You know, if you think that because it's quiet now or quiet into the early part of August, that it's going to be a lackluster year, you could be, you know, very mistaken about that. You know, the fact that you live on the water, you're blessed, but you have to respect that power. The power of that water and what could come in off that water is serious. I've been there. I've done a lot of these. They're all different. Just be ready. Like I said, I ask you to leave, and I'll stay and I'll take you through it. All right. I'll show you what's happening back there, but just be ready.
Words of wisdom. And Jim, we'll stay vigilant this year and be watching you and your team if anything were to threaten the coastline. Really appreciate you taking time to come on the GeoTrek podcast and share your experiences looking back at Hurricane Katrina.
Thanks for having me, Hal. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jim. I mean, those are really powerful stories about Katrina. But what I love, too, is you gave us some take-home points that we can apply moving forward. I got three main action items from this podcast. Number one, I thought it was interesting that there was some confusion about the elevation of the building where Jim and his team were going to ride out this storm. And it reminds me that every foot matters. You need to know your elevation. If you're in a coastal zone, if you're in a barrier island, low-lying area that could be hit by a hurricane, every foot matters. You really need to know your elevation, but this can apply as well if you live near a river. I mean, it takes time, but you can get out ahead of a storm, know the elevation of your closest water, and know how high you are above that water. That can really be the difference between life and death in a big storm. Number two, this is always fascinating to go back to. A lot of people, when Hurricane Katrina was approaching coastal Mississippi, said, we're going to be fine. Category 5 Hurricane Camille did not flood my house. Katrina's coming in as a Cat 3. I'm fine. And they were not fine. A lot of people drowned because they were not thinking about this correctly. We often say there's more to the story than the category. And we know now the storm surge levels, that saltwater flood, it does not correlate with the category of the storm. We have a category system based on wind. Flood levels don't correlate with that often. And so keep in mind, you need to be very aware of the flood forecast. You can have a massive flood from a Cat 1, 2, or 3 hurricane. You don't need a Category 5 hurricane to get a massive storm surge. Jim really did a good job of explaining that and explaining what this event was. From a hurricane that made landfall as a Cat 3, but produced the highest storm surge on record in the Western Hemisphere. Finally, Jim left this as his take-home point at the end. Even though the hurricane season has been starting off slowly, as far as impacts to the U.S., the Caribbean, and Mexico, things can ramp up in a hurry. I think back to 2022, 3 years ago, September was unbelievably quiet. And then here comes Category 4 Hurricane Ian for Fort Myers area. So things can change in a hurry. Don't let your guard down. Stay vigilant. Again, it only takes one big hit for your community for this to be a devastating hurricane season. So take Jim's advice to heart. Even though things have been relatively slow for July and August, getting into September, October, things can change in a hurry, and you don't want to let your guard down. One way you can prepare for this hurricane season, stay tuned right here to all of our GeoTrek content. We're producing social media content, video content, podcasts. You can subscribe, follow, and like our contacts so you make sure you don't miss the latest information that we're putting out there. So again, like, subscribe, and follow. You'll be up to date with all the latest content we're producing so you're prepared this hurricane season. I'm Hurricane Hal, your host of the GeoTrek podcast. Jim Cantore, a famous personality in weather broadcasting. We are so excited to have you on the podcast this time. And we'd love to hear from our listeners as well. So reach out, give us a shout. And again, stay vigilant as we continue to move through this hurricane season.